Welcome back to the Outskirts podcast with Tanner and friends. We are so pleased to present a short story from listener Marshall. And in keeping with the spooky Halloween theme,
it's a ghost story.
I really didn't want to go to West Point. I really wanted to get an ROTC scholarship and follow my classmates from Plano Senior High, who predominantly went either to Texas A&M or to UT Austin. And as fate would have it, I had a horrible, horrible eyesight, 2600 vision. It was correctable with glasses, but they were Coke bottle lens glasses. And I was also slightly colorblind. So I had to get a medical waiver. And I applied to both ROTC and West Point. And to my complete shock, ROTC actually rejected my medical waiver and West Point accepted me. So off I went to a foreign land known as New York. And I had spent almost my entire life in Texas and Oklahoma. So it was a culture shock, to say the least. And when we first got there, we had initially heard stories from the upperclassmen about ghosts that had inhabited West Point. I certainly discounted them. I did not believe in ghosts at the time, even though my mother did. I thought these were merely stories to try and tear us down or to frighten us, because certainly one of their objectives was to weed out the weak cadets. And I thought this was just another tool that they would do so. One of the prominent stories that was circulated for a long time was of the ghost of room 4714. It was in the Scott Barracks. So West Point is made up of a number of different barracks that look like very thick granite gray stone castle works. The way this story goes of the ghost that we had heard about from Scott Barracks, before it was a barracks, there was a row of professors' homes there. And one of these homes was engulfed with flames, killed the professor and all of his children. That happened in the 1830s. So that story goes that that particular ghost was haunting a portion of those barracks, the ghost of room 4714. However, what I saw was something very, very different. To my knowledge, except for the other three young men that were with me, I don't know of anybody who has seen exactly what I saw. So because it's a military academy, there are a lot of restrictions on us, to say the least. We weren't allowed off of campus until our senior year. We weren't allowed to own cars. We weren't even allowed to listen to music or have records or tape decks or stereos in our rooms. There was really essentially no dating either, because at the time it was 90% men, so very few females, and you really didn't have time even if you wanted to. So there was very, very little outlet for a young man. We were very, very focused on both academics and athletics and learning about the Army and military ways. But naturally, as a young man, you need an outlet. So some people would find various ways to do so. My form of entertainment, my outlet, was pulling college pranks. And I became very good at this. Typically, the pranks that we engaged in were usually on Friday nights prior to a Saturday football game. And the Saturday football game is a big, big deal. It's one of those places where we could actually kind of let down our guard a little bit in cheering for the team. Prior to the football game, there would be a huge march, a parade with all of us in our full dress uniforms going around the parade field. We didn't enjoy the parades, but the public certainly did. It was quite a spectacle. We had a name for these college pranks. We called them spirit missions, ironically enough. And as I said, I got very good at that, meaning I could pull off a lot of things and not get caught by the roaming military police or officers who might be up late at night. And did things like painted murals indicating we need to beat Navy, and putting blankets over statues, moving Revolutionary War cannons. There's a row of Revolutionary War cannons that are still remaining out there on the west point of the river itself. And at the time, I was of the Lutheran faith, the Lutherans would gather every Sunday morning at what is known as the Old Cadet Chapel. The Old Cadet Chapel, which used to be on the plain, was built in 1836. And when the new chapel was built, it was picked up brick by brick and moved to the front entrance of the West Point Cemetery. And the West Point Cemetery has a lot of famous people that are buried there. General Norman Schwarzkopf, General Westmoreland, Ed White, who was one of the Apollo astronauts that was killed in Apollo 1, General Winfield Scott. And as an American history major, I would occasionally meander through the cemetery after the Lutheran services. Now, there was actually a regulation that we were not allowed to cut through the cemetery, but I justified that because I was visiting the grave sites of these famous men. So one day after a very boring Lutheran service, I meandered through the cemetery, and there's a small gateway. I have to describe, the entire cemetery is surrounded by a stone wall that is about 4 feet tall. On the opposite side of that wall is essentially a cliff that goes down to the Hudson River itself. So as I had meandered through the cemetery one afternoon, I noticed that just outside of the stone wall was a large pile of old discarded tombstones. And so I had a brilliant idea for a spirit mission. And my idea was to take one of these headstones and on the back side of it, opposite of whoever's name was engraved in it, I would put, "Here lies the remains of Boston College football team killed by the Army football team on such and such date in 1991. And I would take this headstone and I would put it right on the superintendent's front lawn facing the parade field for everybody to see, all the spectators, all of us marching, all the officers, everybody. So I hatched this plan and I recruited 3 underclassmen. And so my plan was to borrow a wheelbarrow from the superintendent's garden. We would go behind down an alleyway behind a row of professors' homes, cut across Thayer Road, enter the cemetery, pick up the tombstone, bring it back, put our painting on it, and then plant it on the superintendent's front lawn. We were not allowed out of bed after taps, after it's either 10:30 or 11 o'clock. And that was strictly enforced by a number of officers who would roam the academy and by military policemen as well. So we had to be very careful and very stealthy whenever we engaged in these spirit missions, which is what made them fun, essentially. So I had my merry band and we climbed over the wall of the superintendent's garden, borrowed his wheelbarrow, went down the alleyway through the cemetery, through that back niche in the wall to where these discarded tombstones lay. And I had already pre-chose one that I thought was not too broken. It looked completely intact. And it was, of course, it was extremely heavy, which is why I had recruited these 3 other guys. It was probably about 150 pounds of pure granite. So it took 4 of us to lift it out of this pile of debris and place into the wheelbarrow. So we started to head back. And in doing so, one guy grabbed one handle of the wheelbarrow. Another guy grabbed another. And the other 2 of us were on either side of the headstone to kind of steady it because we have a one-wheeled contraption we're moving this with. So we started to head back down the road where the hearses would be maneuvering for burial ceremonies. And when you do so, initially you go past a fountain, and then there's a caretaker's cottage there, which no caretaker lives there. It's just, that's what it's called. It's an old cottage that was built in 1873. And somebody glanced behind them and said, "Oh my gosh, we're being followed." And we all glanced back, and sure enough, there was a man behind us, all dressed in gray. Well, we didn't want to get caught. Our initial thought was, boom, this is either the MPs or an officer, somebody's caught us. And as we started moving faster, kind of at a trot, he started trotting towards us. We glanced back, we saw this gray figure coming at us again. So we started running now, as quick as we possibly could with a 150-pound tombstone and a wheelbarrow. Now we were a little bit concerned and frightened because none of this is making sense to us, because the MPs don't wear gray. And why in the world would anybody be jogging through the cemetery at midnight? And how come we didn't see this guy when we initially entered the cemetery? There's no way he could have come up the backside of the wall unless he had climbed a cliff. So we're all processing this in our head as quickly as we can, and it didn't make sense. So we continued down that path to a row of bushes that was just past the old cadet chapel. We dove inside the bushes and we peered around the bushes. And sure enough, this ghastly gray figure was running towards us down the road. We tried to do a military maneuver called an envelopment. We went from the bushes around the backside of the old cadet chapel and we peered down the road and the man was gone. This image, this gray figure had vanished. The conclusion I drew was that this had to be what is commonly referred to as a ghost. I don't know if this was his headstone or if it was somebody else's headstone. I don't know whose ghost this was. And one of the guys, his name was Jordan, I remember him, he said, "Look, there's a black dog." And sure enough, at the exact same point where we had last seen that man, a black dog was crossing the cemetery perpendicular to where our position was. If there's a lesson in this, it's don't go into cemeteries after midnight. It's not a place for the living.
Thank you, Marshall, for sharing that amazing ghost story. I did a little looking into the ghosts of West Point myself. I read where paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren, notably of Amityville and The Conjuring franchise fame, visited the campus in 1972. Prior to that, famed psychic Gene Dixon had been invited to investigate the ghosts of Scott Barracks and was literally thrown out by a ghost. I guess it's a good thing she didn't visit the cemetery. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please be sure to subscribe, and if you enjoy it, share it. Please submit written or audio summary of your story to outskirts@tannerandfriends.com. Yep. This episode of the Outskirts podcast was brought to you in part by Felix's Semi-Natural Butch Wax. For all you butches who needed to stand up and stay up, we're talking about hair now. Felix's Semi-Natural Butch Wax is guaranteed to perform in all conditions, regardless of humidity, rain, extreme temperatures. It says here you can even swim in the stuff. Felix's Semi-Natural Butch Wax is naturally derived from recycled petroleums and carnauba waxes through a proprietary process which Felix himself has developed. Now, Felix would like you to know, he did experience some hair loss and temporary confusion in the days following his first self-application. But he also says, and this is important now, he also wants you to really understand that his isolated experience does not provide a meaningful sample size, scientifically speaking, that is. Okay, well, I guess he does have a point there. Felix's Semi-Natural Butch Wax is packaged in a strikingly handsome, non-recyclable vinyl tube. You just push a finger up through the bottom, and the wax protrudes from the top. Very ergonomic. Thanks, Felix's Semi-Natural Butch Wax,